Life Show on UK Health Radio. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm the host of the show and also founder of the UK charity of the same name, Yes to Life, which is committed to bringing a much broader view of cancer care to people with a diagnosis, one which gives a truly holistic response to the immense challenges of cancer and cancer treatment. Recently, in our conferences and elsewhere, we've been exploring the spiritual side of the crisis of cancer and the ways in which this can actually provide an opportunity to find answers to some of the biggest questions in life. This, in turn, can completely transform our relationship to our situation. Dr. Patrick Hanaway, past president of the American Board of Integrative Holistic Medicine, and past Chief Medical Officer for the Institute of Functional Medicine, also Medical Director, then Research Director of the Cleveland Clinic, has an abiding interest in this arena, and so I'm absolutely delighted to be able to welcome him to the show today. Hi, Patrick. Absolute pleasure and honor to have you on the Yes Life Show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure as well.
So I was fortunate to be present at both your recent talks at the Integrative and Personalized Medicine Congress in London, which I found hugely inspiring, but it also left me wanting to sit down for a really good chat with you to explore some of the material you've been sharing. In amongst all the business of the event, that wasn't to be, so this interview seems to me the perfect way to create a space for that exploration.
I'm so happy for it. Sorry we're not in person, but it was great to see you at multiple different events at the Congress.
So I wonder if you mind me starting out by asking a couple of things about you. Over your career, you've become very well known for your work in the fields of functional and integrative medicine, holding all sorts of key positions in both, and driving forward some of the most important initiatives of recent decades, aiming to embed a new way of looking at health and well-being and what healthcare could look like. So in your talks at IPM, functional and integrated medicine were in there, but they really seemed to be a kind of lead-in to discussing the biggest questions about our true identity and the deep underpinnings of our well-being. So on the face of it, it would look like your personal exploration of health and well-being had led you naturally from functional and integrated medicine to what could be described as spiritual well-being. But is that really true, or were these, in fact, parallel interests all along?
Yeah, they're definitely parallel interests that have been, that have woven back and forth with each other over a long, long period of time. So in medical school, I was interested in this domain, but it was really kind of taboo at that point in time. I could push enough against the mind-body aspect of things and explore that without being too far outside the pale. But then as I moved forward in my residency training, actually, I became exposed to Tibetan Buddhism and Tibetan medicine. And while I had studied Chinese medicine while I was in medical school, learning Tibetan medicine and the deeper roots of the medicine Buddha and of a bigger view of healing was very formative for me at that point in time. I got to study with a great master, and then when I came back to the United States, I studied in Ayurvedic medicine because Tibetan medicine wasn't available, and the teacher had said, if you want to learn this, you have to learn Tibetan. And I wasn't ready to do that. So I learned, you know, Ayurvedic medicine and the deeper aspects of systems-based approach. So when functional medicine came forward, I had, you know, been using integrative approaches. Integrative approaches I think of as different modalities. I'd been using those in my practice. And then I took a systems view, and it's like, oh, this is very much like traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurvedic medicine in the way it looks at function and balance and movement. So as I began working in that domain and teaching in that domain, I guess we call it coincidence, which is always never a coincidence,
right?
But rather it's the way life unfolds. I was introduced to a teacher, who was working with the Huichol or Vedatica people in the Sierra Madres, and leading people on pilgrimage or becoming a shaman or a Marakame, in the words of the Huichol people. I initially said, "No way, I am not interested. I don't want anything to do with that," which I'm told is how the indigenous people react to it when they're told. But it unfolded, and curiously enough, it unfolded almost exactly in parallel, beginning in 2002, with my deepening into functional medicine and teaching and training and going around the world. And so all of those opportunities that I had were being done in parallel with work that I was doing in Mexico of learning from the Vedatica people.
So it's more like this is a response to the changing environment in which this kind of exploration is much more acceptable than it used to be. There's much wider interest.
It is, and I've got to tell you, Robin, I mean, we met, first 5, 6 years ago, and I was beginning to share a little bit of it through my own healing journey. But coming out and actively speaking about it as, the aspect of, ancient wisdom, integrating ancient wisdom in modern times, is something that it's still scary for me. I'm known as this, scientist, researcher, teacher, and to be able to open up to this aspect of healing, which is an extension of what's been done. We had the body, then we had the mind body. Now we have the mind body and spirit, or the sacred, in bringing those together, and they're all necessary.
Yeah, it's been interesting to witness over the 20 years or so that I've been doing this, where the spirituality bit of it was a sort of add-on on the end and nice to have. But it's actually moving to where I think it rightfully should be, which is kind of underneath everything else, the foundation.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, really interesting. Well, you alluded there to the fact that, in 2018 you had a diagnosis of late stage cancer, which you've been public about. But which you, along with a growing number of others, seem to have achieved what Dr. Kelly Turner termed a radical remission. You're here, still enjoying your life. So I imagine that this encounter with mortality and the unavoidable uncertainty that it carries in its wake have had a profound effect on your view of life, much as it has for lots of other people. So I wonder if you'd tell us about the impact the experience of cancer has had on you.
I'm always surprised, Robin, when I talk about this, that I begin to tear up initially. Never gets old. The diagnosis of, like feeling a little nodule and calling my friend the ENT doctor, or a lymph node, and calling my friend the ENT doctor on a Friday, and he saw me on Monday, and I had a diagnosis of stage 4 laryngeal cancer on Wednesday. Very quick, very fortunate. But it was like, boom, it happened so quickly. And I thought, oh, I could die. I'm working to be okay with that. And my eldest son, it was actually Thanksgiving Day the next day, and we were together, and he said, "Well, if you feel like you just want to die, then I don't really want to help you. But if you feel like you want to live, I want to help you." And that was, sort of a startling comment from my eldest son. And it also kind of woke me up to say, yes, I want to live. I want to do whatever I can. And integrating all of the different types of modalities and opportunities, and really working to be discerning about them, the impact that it had was not so much about, oh, this is about doing all the right things. Impact that it had was around, I need to ask for help in my life. I need to engage other people. I've always been sort of, a strong, strong like a bull. I can do this, and confidence in myself. And now it's like, oh, I need the help of others. And the help of others is immensely beneficial. And the help of others helps me to be able to feel like I want to live and have the support to be able to do that. You know, I reached some, you know, Valpurgis Nacht, some dark night of the soul in the process. And you know, it said, I do want to live. You know, I do want to go forward in relationship with my wife, my family, my friends. And so I think that was really the biggest aspect. The second biggest aspect was about the awareness of how much being in the natural world, being able to engage and just slow down, made a huge difference in my healing. Like I did all the other things, acupuncture, frequency specific microcurrent, you know, chemotherapy, radiation therapy, feeding tube, keto diet, you know, and spending time in nature seemed to make the biggest difference, as well as my prayer and shamana.
Interesting. So those are both kind of connection areas you talked about there, connection to others in terms of getting their help, and connection to nature in terms of a broader environment where we are nature, of course.
Right. We could talk about connection as the common phrase there, right? Common
term. Yeah. Very interesting. Yeah. Well, it's the thing about cancer is that, it's a total beast, cancer, but it does seem to have this opportunity in it, this golden lining for people to ask questions like whether they want to really be here. It's a big question, isn't it? And not everybody has got an answer immediately, funnily enough. You'd think it was obvious, but it's not. It's complicated.
It is. And a dear friend of mine developed esophageal cancer. We were very close. We were leaders of an integrated medicine organization. And he got stage 4 cancer back in 2010. And I said, why aren't you fighting? And he said, I'm accepting that this is what's going to happen. And it's like, but you're not fighting. You're not like, you're accepting whatever happens rather than saying, I want to live. And he and I had very difficult, you know, fights about that, very close friends fights about that. And I came to accept it. And when I got the diagnosis, I understood it for the first time.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, oh, that's what happened. And that's why I'm so thankful to my son and my family for just being like, we're here with you. We want to help, and we're going to do whatever we can. Are you going to show up? And that was key.
Mm. Yeah, really important. It's just more and more eye-opening how important the will to live is in the outcome. However it goes, it just seems that the not bland acceptance of circumstance, obviously that's part of the picture. There's no point in not accepting your circumstance, but there's a phrase which I use very often, which is trust in Allah but tie your camel well, which I think is a great phrase, because it does encompass both these aspects. So we as human beings, we are part of a huge unknowable something, but we're also, we have this ability to act and to play our part and to engage. And it seems that for life to be to the fullest, that's what we should do. We should do both those things at the same time. And when we get posed this question, you know, with something like cancer comes along, well, then we actually see where we are.
Well, I think there's another aspect of it that's important to acknowledge as well. And that is that healing to become more whole, right? And that's what we're talking about, is whole medicine, whole health. Healing happens into life and into death. Death is not it's not a mistake, or it's not like you did it wrong. Because some people, you know, you're going to move into that. And how do I say yes to life and live my fullest life, whether I'm moving towards healing in terms of physical health and well-being, or whether I'm moving towards healing and being more whole in engaging the process of dying. You know, it's going to happen for all of us.
Sometimes.
100%.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's that. I love the work of Stephen and Andrea Levine about healing into life and death, because it gives the opportunity to live full. right? Yes, to life
Yeah.
as we're there.
Yeah, absolutely with you there. Yeah. And the, you know, something that some people would sum up the difference between two relationships to the efforts to stay alive. One of them is trying not to die, and the other one's trying to live as well as you can. And they are
precisely
quite different things. Yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You might have noticed that our upcoming conference is titled Reclaiming Our True Nature.
Yeah.
So in your talk at IPM, you spoke at length about our loss of connection, about the journey that we've been on as a race away from our true nature, and the suffering and this has caused to us and to our environment. Then you went on and you listed 5 healing emotions or antidotes, I think you called them, that can help us to reconnect to our inner wisdom. Will you tell us a bit more about those?
Sure. Well, when we talk about antidotes that, if you will, that the gods, that spirit, that life has given to us, you know, first we have, you know, wisdom, you know, learn to be able to, you know, face and persevere difficult, even impossible situations. Then we have the aspect of tradition where we remember, we hold the wisdom and pass it along. And then we have ceremony to be able to help us to be able to, you know, transform our isolation and connect to the sacred. And then we have, as you just asked, those specialized healing emotions that are they're uniquely part of being human. You know, we have courage to be able to face our fears. We have humor, laughter. It lightens the burden of, you know, there's some difficult things that happen, but it lightens the burden. It's always amazing to be in these indigenous communities and seeing what might appear to a Western eye of some poverty, and they're laughing and they're joyful and they're in difficult times, but they relate to it from a point of it's all the unfolding. And then there's gratitude, particularly important, you know, the kinship, the reciprocity, the exchange. It's like I am offering something because I recognize that this might not have happened. I am given thanks that there is food on my table, that I have shelter, that I have relationships and connection with people, with the animals, with the weather beings, all of them. There is deep grief, you know, that is really about how we let go. You know, the natural cycles of life. I was just reading a piece from Wendell Berry the other day. You know, and it's around Sir Albert, who talked about it's the cycle of life, and it has to move, through death and decay in order for reemergence to occur. And so that grief must happen. And in the Western cultures, in America in particular, we tend to avoid that. We tend to not want to do that. And that's the longest of emotions, you know, like humor or happiness come very quickly and fleeting, but grief, that's a long emotion to be able to go through. And then there's that aspect of the immensity and the beauty. We could call it wonder. We could call it awe. Dacher Keltner writes about it beautifully. But it's connecting to those experiences that are different for everyone of how we connect to the awe of the world. And that helps me to put me in my place, to helps me to recognize, oh, this is so much bigger than my little brain.
Mm. So maybe, yeah, you could talk a little bit about yourself and that, how those different factors play in for you. I mean, people can get their head down in their lives to the extent where awe just doesn't play a place at all. It's quite easy to lose it completely. But there are choices you can make which would bring it back in the door.
Right. Well, I mean, we've seen that these various antidotes, these various aspects of wisdom has been, you know, cast aside as information, or as, you know, as the World Wide Web or AI, you know, the cultural traditions have been lost and ceremonies have been misjudged, you know, and the emotions are kind of discounted. So what we want to do is we want to have the opportunity to recognize, like, wow, we're living in a time in the world where we've never had such growth, such technological marvels, so many things, so much convenience, right? And yet we feel anxious, you know, we feel disconnected, you know, all-time high, you know, suicides and illness and depression, all of these things, you know, and it's the fear that fractures these relationships. We don't connect to each other and to the natural world and to the sacred in the same way. So without that connection, we are lost, right? But we have the opportunity to be able to reconnect. We have the opportunity to be able to be vulnerable, to share and learn, to, you know, fear. When fear arises, we meet it with courage. Courage doesn't arise out of its own self. It arises in the setting. Courage doesn't arise of itself. It arises from fear. Like when we have fear, and we all have fear, we have fears of our own inadequacy, fears of other people, fears of the natural world, and fears of, as you mentioned at the beginning, uncertainty, the unknown. And that uncertainty, it's like, it's there. You know, we pretend it's not there. We try to, yeah, you know, coat ourselves and protect ourselves from the fear. But everyone knows, every time I say this to someone, it's like, your phone can ring and your life will change forever through something that you've heard. I remember, you know, hearing the phone ring from my father, you know, being diagnosed with a very severe cancer at 60 years old. And I just, you know, remember lying on the floor crying, because it was like, wow. And that changed my life. Like, I haven't had a father for 32 years. So, you know, it can change so quickly. And yeah, we have the opportunity to be able to meet it with curiosity, with wonder, with awe, with gratitude. Like, that's the opportunity that we have. And how do we begin living from that place? You know, how do we connect to, you know, a fire or a candle and say a prayer of thanks, of gratitude for all that I have, even if it's just, you know, a morsel of food? I have the opportunity. I'm alive. That is enough to be thankful. So these are the, you know, these are the essential things. And we use that prayer to contemplate a future that could be different. We use the connection to the sacred that's, you know, pervasive and mysterious You know, there is nothing that is mundane. Everything is precious. And so as we listen to the, you know, hard voice about, you know, being aware that we're in relationship with the divine mystery, with the sacred all the time, mystery, humility, awe, wonder, openness, all is possible. We have the opportunity to be able to engage it. And that's really what, you know, I feel at this point in time, Robin, called to in my life and my career as a healer, like moving beyond physician to healer, to say, this is important. And so within the process overall, we do see that, like, the body aspect of molecular biology is important. It helps us to be able to understand, but we have to frame it within a, you know, a complex ecosystem, you know, frame it within that terrain of adaptation from a systems biology perspective. And we need to deepen that spiritual connection that we have through, as I said, through gratitude and prayer, through relationships, not concepts, but relationships, and develop awareness. Develop and through practice, develop an embodiment of feelings. This is where the opportunity is for us to be able to individually and communally grow. And as you said, seems like something's changing in the world over the past 10 to 20 years, where this is now becoming more commonly seen and accepted and related to, which brings me great joy.
Yes. It's really interesting the way that's happening. I mean, you know, I'm sure lots of people experience this thing of thinking they're going down a track of thought, which is sort of unusual or whatever, and then finding out, oh, whoa, there's lots of other people thinking the same thing. That really is happening a lot.
Right.
So, yeah, interesting. I mean, I love what you just said about none of it being mundane. It really isn't. It just always strikes me about life that on closer inspection you stumble across the infinite very quickly. Wherever you look, there's always something in whatever you can look at. If you pay attention, it will blow your mind, so to speak, because you can't encompass it entirely. You know, this kind of superficial relationship to the world where we're stumbling along from minute to minute, not paying attention. We can do it within that, just think that life is mundane, but we're wrong. It just isn't if we pay attention. And it also put me in mind of what you were saying at the beginning about your own experience of one of the most important things to you at that time when you were diagnosed was nature. Nature, if you don't have a sort of paranoia about nature, which I know some people do, it's quite a welcoming environment to immerse yourself in. There's the difficulties, it seems to me, in connecting with nature are less than they might be with people. You know, there's a lot of difficulties people have connecting with people, but nature is kind of welcoming in that way, I think. But yeah.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
Health Radio, the the station that makes you feel good.
One of the ways I mentioned the teacher who first connected me to the Huichol people, he was, you know, he was an Anglo. He actually had was an acupuncturist, taught with Worsley in London, and then, you know, he wanted to connect me deeper to the natural world, and ended up working with various different indigenous elders, and was invited to be able to go on pilgrimage and then lead people on pilgrimage. But what he taught me initially was called plant spirit medicine. And that aspect was about, how do we listen to plant people? How do we develop a relationship with the plant people who can help us, you know, in this way? And that opened my eyes. Good. I mean, he did it from a framework of five element Chinese medicine, mm-hmm. but it opened my eyes to, like, oh, I can have a direct relationship with the plants that are around, you know. And I'm not talking about like the house plants. I'm talking about, and it can be that, but it's the plants that are on the land where I live, and I connect to them when they're flowering, go deeply and develop a relationship so they can help me in to be a benefit to other people. Mm. You know, and so that's an aspect of what you're speaking about there, where, you know, we're moving to be able to deeply connect to all of the natural world. And, you know, I say it's alive, like everything is alive. The animistic view of all of life, you know, whether it's the weather beings or the rains or the sun, Father Tao, ocean, you know, Tate Haramata, or Mother Earth, Yuri Naka, or Grandmother Growth, Tikutiak Way, each of these representations, each of these expressions are all alive. And how do I relate to them from that perspective? You know, how do I listen to the heart voice and deepen my relationship with all of those aspects of life? That's the opportunity. And, you know, and quite frankly, Robin, sometimes I do it well and sometimes I don't do it at all. Sometimes I forget.
Yeah. So, but it all goes on.
and it all goes on.
Whatever we're thinking. Yeah.
That's the learning opportunity, isn't it?
You've already alluded to this earlier. You talked a little bit about imagining a future. And I know that both you and I have explored and appreciated the work of Ian McGilchrist, laying out the territory of our true nature and the way that we've become lost in the relativity of extraordinary capacities for logic that we got and thought, and that way we've become detached from reality. But he, interestingly enough, when he is talking about reconnecting with our true nature, he points to imagination as a bridge or a doorway back to reality. Just wonder what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I've seen those conversations, and I don't call it imagination.
Okay.
You know, I call it creativity. You know, I call it the openness to be able to receive. And so that creativity in the worldview that I've been taught, it arises from Grandmother Ocean. All things are possible from the creativity and the opportunity of the ocean. We look at 2/3, 3/4 of the world is the ocean. You know, you go 2 feet under in most places and it's dark. You know, it's the opportunity for something or an expression of life to emerge. And so in that way, it's about creativity. His imagination invokes, from my perspective, it invokes the mind. It's the mind imagining something. Whereas it's not actually imagining anything. You know, it's creating a story, but if it's listening to the world, that the focus is more on listening to the world and allowing for that creativity to emerge, you know, so that we can, like, say, like, we need some creativity as human beings right now.
We certainly do.
We have some opportunity to be helped by the gods and by the world. Like, it's there to help us But we got to be doing something different, because if we keep doing the same thing, it's not going to work out well, right? And so how we creatively move and express in that way, that becomes the more provocative aspect to me, that goes, I would say, goes beyond imagination, or it is there in lieu of imagination, because we're not going to figure this out with our minds. We've tried to figure this out with our minds, and look what it's gotten us. I go back to, for some reason, I was just thinking about even a book that I read early on by E.F. Schumacher, Economics as If People Mattered. It's like we have to connect to each other. It's not about taking, right? The one of the fundamental premises of McGilchrist is talking about, it's a little bit overly simplistic, although he's done the research on it, of left brain, right brain, and how left brain is about apprehending the world, using it, grabbing it, finding out what it is good for, what it is needed for, and taking that. Well, that's the contradistinction to, like what Robin Wall Kimmerer would say, that it's like, there's so much of our time, for the earth to stay in balance and for the gifts to continue to flow, we must give back in equal measure to what we take. And so it's that dynamic flow, and that will allow the opportunities to emerge, and that will allow creativity to emerge. And we have to work from that aspect, from our heart voice, not from our mind voice, right? And so in McGilchrist's view, the right brain, the heart voice, if you will, is about comprehending. It's a holistic view of the whole thing. It's not about apprehending and taking. It's about balance in what's going on there. And the left brain, that apprehending nature cannot see that it is only a small part of the process. It feels like that representation is the whole, whereas the right brain recognize that, oh, it's both and, right? We use that aspect of, again, his words, the emissary, to be able to, the mind is a useful tool as human beings. It has helped us to get to where we are. It has helped us to be able to thrive in ways that we weren't able to. It is what makes us different than every other animal, the choosing animal, but it is not in control. We have placed it in control.
All right, thank you. Okay, well, look, I just want to jump to something completely different than the last few minutes we got,
Sure.
because you said something which I really liked. We were talking about miracles, and I just want to explore the nature of those a little. Increasingly, people faced with a certain terminal diagnosis are, rather like you, defying the odds and having a miraculous recovery. The word miraculous is used, and it seems appropriate because there's no really sound rational explanation within conventional thinking to explain what's happened here. So I really like the fact that you decided to kind of dispense with calling these inexplicable events miracles. Can you tell us why?
One is, I keep seeing it happen. I keep seeing the emergence of a different way of expression in the world of, patients with, stage four cancer who, have a recovery that no one expected. Seeing someone who has a complex chronic disease, which everything's been tried, and then them, spending time in nature, and all of a sudden things all disappear symptomatically. And so, as we talked briefly about, what my experience is like, it is not miraculous. It is actually the way the world is, the way in which it moves. When we allow it and give it the opportunity to be able to move, things that are beyond our mental imagination can occur. So it goes back to that aspect of McGilchrist. It's not about imagination. It's like it's beyond our imagination they can do unfold commonly. In fact, every day, aspects or expressions of life unfold that our mind cannot comprehend. And that doesn't necessarily make it a miracle. I think probably some of my aversion to the term miracle is from my Catholic upbringing, and you know, and thinking that it's about a saint and, you know, some miracle or around, you know, Jesus Christ. There is no doubt that those beings, you know, moved in a way that they listened to the world. They allowed for things and helped to support and flow with things to be expressed that were beyond the mind's capacity to understand. I believe that to be true. But I wouldn't call that a miracle. I would call that just flow.
Wow. Okay. New terminology. Yeah. It's interesting because it in a way that you're talking about allowing things to happen in that way. And it's notable that it seems like things like, if I use the example of a buzzword that's around a lot, synchronicity, that seems to be something that really probably is happening like mad all the time. The thing that changes is whether we notice it or not.
Exactly.
So when you talk about allowing, you know, in a way, it's also about allowing for a possibility that these things could be happening. That's part of it, is that the thinking that makes a miracle look like a miracle is the thinking that knows what's happening, knows what's going on, knows what's supposed to happen, and then it doesn't.
Right.
So that's also excludes synchronicity, for example.
I think synchronicity is just, it's a name for what that is. You know, it's the term synchronicity is one that is focused on, as you said, kind of thinking it knows what's happening or interpreting what is happening. But the co-emergence of life, you know, is happening all the time. You know, I mentioned to you this morning, you know, yesterday I said, oh, I want to connect you to this person in Surrey. And
yes.
And then this morning I pick up my phone and there's a call from this person from Surrey. You know, it's like, how can that happen? You know, that happened. Like I mentioned her name yesterday. She calls me this morning as we're getting ready to talk. And of course you're in Surrey. And so what are the odds of that happening?
They shouldn't happen, these things.
And we call it synchronicity, but it's really about listening to life. Like something happened there that, you know, she was listening to life. I was listening to life. There's something that is there. And that's so, I don't know what the word I want to use is, but it's, you know, that's the expression of living life in its fullest form.
Yeah, and allowing for that seems to me it's about appreciating the joined upness, the ultimate connectivity that the universe is, you know, one thing. If we have a deep appreciation of that, then we can allow that things can happen like this, which we can't explain them, but nonetheless, in a certain kind of way, well, obviously, you know, everything's connected, so that are going to happen.
Exactly. It is what's happening. So lest I have a thought about why it's happening, it really doesn't matter. You know, it's happening.
Exactly. Yeah. It is extraordinary. I mean, you know, when you have your radar out for these things, the rate at which coincidences seem to happen is just extraordinary. It's just like an experience like you just described. These things are actually quite common, and you can either just look straight past them and carry on down the path of the mundane life, or you can be lost in awe and wonder at the fact that there's something going on here we will never ever get the hang of.
And so the thing that I want to say as we move towards closing is the awareness that is really emerging in me is that in order to be truly happy in this life, in order to be truly helpful and a benefit to our people in this life, one has to fall in love with all of creation. All of creation. And when we connect to our life, you know, with this view, it changes the lens with which we see the world. Opportunities exist far beyond our imagination, far, far beyond what we think.
Well, that's an amazing note to end on, Patrick. What a great conversation. I'm so glad we pursued this. And it's been wonderful to talk to you and to explore all this stuff a bit more. I hope we get another opportunity not too far from now.
And I hope it's in person if it can be possible. But, you know, Rob and I,
well, that would be great.
I still appreciate your courage, you know, to be able to step into the emerging view. A different view that allows for an expression that's absolutely necessary at this point in time. There are a few people who are carrying the banner for that, and you are, and I say yes to life.
Thank you. Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye. Love that conversation. Dr. Hannaway has immersed himself in an exploration of our shared humanity to such a degree that he has an immense amount to share with us all. I do hope you enjoyed listening to him as much as I did. And if you're keen to explore this territory further, you won't want to miss the recordings from our recent online conference, Reclaiming Our True Nature, available from the Yes to Life online store. And to get there, you just go to the charity website, which is yestolife.org.uk, and you select Online Store from the very top of the page. Once you're in the store, choose Insight and Expert Talks. You'll also not want to miss the in-person conference of the same name, which is on the 26th of September in central London. Full details and booking are to be found at conference.yestolife.org.uk. And for those of you unable to make it to this event, recordings will be available afterwards from the online store. Thanks so much for listening. It's my absolute pleasure to introduce brilliant guests such as Dr. Hannaway to you each week. So I hope you can listen again next week when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye. Thank you.